But are we better off this way? Echo Take the Band, Out of Long of the Song. Mark Burford, the singer. What did you make of Echo Tape and Out of Love? Would you consider it for a Sound and Country Vision test? Or would you say, I don't know?
I really like that. I thought that was really upbeat. It's got quite a familiar sound as well. But
It does. Lots of drums and things. So I'm thinking big country, actually. I'm definitely thinking.
I really like that.
There's a kind of big country notion that's coming through into that. I'm not sure. You're too young to remember big country. But so what were you doing with Emily, another Midweek driver who is sort of still with us, though she never does the shows these days? What were you doing up in Newcastle over the weekend?
Well, Emily and I was volunteering at the BBC Three Festival of Ideas. Mm-hmm. So we were involved in all kinds of... all kinds of jobs while we were there. Mic handling, that was quite fun. So at the end of each talk, we'd go up to whoever, you know, was asking a question, give them the mic.
I'm pleased you said that, because obviously mic handling in certain contexts we'll be actually looking for people who happen to be named Michael and doing something which we don't even want to talk about now. So mic handling, yes. No, but actually organising the microphones, that's different.
That's the short term.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of, you know, the short
sometimes term. The general public get confused. So you say something about mic handling and instantly you have to deal with legal writs. It becomes very messy.
I called it that because that's what was down on our schedule. Yeah, so, you know, I thought I'd use the correct term. Yeah,
and you did, Tessa. You know, and
gave it a definition. And we were also involved in audience engagement. So on the bottom floor of the Sage, which is where we were based for the festival, called the Concourse, there was lots of creative activities going on. So you could, I don't know, get involved with art. You could take a creativity test, all kinds of things. Write answers to questions on a postcard and stick it up on this board, which was quite fun. And it was just really nice to work with a lot of people, meet a lot of new people, including guests. One of my favourite, I've got to say, was Joanna Trollope. I loved her, the author. She was fantastic. But we were just kind of, you know, like extra pair of hands, taking guests to and from dressing rooms, things like that.
They were fortunate enough to have you as a professional accompaniment for the whole sort of system.
Thank you. Well done
for being ambassador for the university and all sorts of other bits and pieces as well. It's the University of Lincoln. Let's move on and progress to our next guest, which should be Louis Savvy, who's the founder and chief executive officer of Sci-Fi London. He's going to be connecting with us. He was a bit poorly a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully he's back on full force now. It is, of course, a day where we've revealed, at least Amazon Smile have revealed, that Sunny Day is the top reason why 50% of people smile. Do you smile, Tessa? Why do you smile?
Why do I? Yeah. When I'm happy or something, I don't know. I smile quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this with William Coles in the early part of the programme. Things that make us smile. Eating fish and chips by the sea, 36%.
Actually, I would actually, yes.
Yeah, hearing a baby laugh, 36%.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Seeing an older couple holding hands.
Yeah, because you go, and then smile.
Depends how old they are, really. I mean, they're really chronologically, you have to say, get a room. Giving money to charity.
Yeah, I think that does. What about animals? Animals make us smile.
Do they?
Yeah.
Actually, yes, they do, but do they smile? Well, this is something Phil Dienis can talk about with Fuzz Aldrin in the latter parts of the programme. He may be listening to the whole programme. He may not be doing anything at all, because, of course, they are still, they haven't sprung forward as yet in Los Angeles. But tomorrow morning, we'll be having Poland's answer to Ed Sheeran on the airwaves, and we thought we'd give you a sneak peek today. With Z Kresge and Smile.
Stay, 'cause I won't ever let you go.
Styles, Poland's answer to Ed Sheeran, Z Kliski, and Smile. Well, Tessa, I just wonder what will the genius behind Sci-Fi London actually have to say about that? Which genius behind Sci-Fi London, you may well say?
Sci-Fi London simply wouldn't exist without Louis Savvy. Nor, for that matter, would the Louis Savvy phone link on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Relax, and let your mind expand.
Exactly. And somewhere in the world it is morning, isn't it, Louis?
I think that's probably true, yeah.
It's morning in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, if
I'm way, not way off base here in Los Angeles, it's just coming around to 10:15. So they haven't spoken for us. It's all very confusing.
Do you want me to go there instead?
No, it's all right. Don't worry, Louis. You know, just stay where you are, like the fulcrum.
I know there's no expense spent at Siren FM, but I'm happy to get to the airport.
You see, Tessa, this is what we call a man who sees the line, he then exceeds the line, and then goes 1 mile further than that line that he's already exceeded.
There we go.
I've drawn my own line.
Oh,
exactly.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
Tragically, Louis, I'm not sure whether this year we'll be able to put in a team for the 48-hour film challenge.
Oh, no, why?
Well, it looks as though it's only Tessa, in essence.
It's just me.
You know, Hannah effectively seems to be just locked into her dissertation. Holly, likewise. Kaylee's... I mean, Eva, I think, would be up for it, but she is based in a part of Lincolnshire that even I wasn't aware existed.
I know, she's doing a lot of training.
Yeah.
You don't fancy another remote one, then, like you did last time?
Well, that I think is the only way we can actually get it together. So, Tessa, it's in your hands as the official head girl.
I have to contact the other drivers and see what...
Exactly. Explain for the benefit of the listener, Louis, though, what exactly do we mean by the 48-hour film challenge?
Very, very simple. So, we challenge you to make a short original science fiction film in 2 days. That simple, but we do add a little few things in there. So we give you the title of the film that you have to make, we give you a line of dialogue we need to see a character say, we give you a prop list, things that you need to go and source when you see on screen, and then we give you an optional science theme, an elevator pitch, sci-fi idea, something like that, that you can use if you want to. You start on a Saturday morning and you have to deliver a complete film that you've written, shot, edited, graded, done everything else to by Monday. Simple.
Yeah, simple. It's quite a turnaround, isn't it? I remember it last year. I actually didn't take part in the end, but I was part of the group chat from the other drivettes that were doing it, and they were all like messaging each other and getting all their footage together, and it is quite fun, actually.
We have some good prizes, and it's really great for people to obviously win it, but... at the end of the day, as I said to everybody, at the end of the day, the worst thing that's going to happen is on Monday you made a film. And that's a really great thing to say that, you know, what did you do at the weekend? Well, we made a film this weekend. You know, it's you have a lot of fun doing it.
It's good teamwork as well, I think, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, if there's anyone out there thinking about management exercises, or going paintballing, you know, or doing any of that sort of stuff, why don't you get everyone to make a film instead? Because that will show real collaboration.
Yeah.
Way, way more, because there's so many things that need to be done and so many things that you need to think about. And again, you know, you don't know how talented people can be either, you know, and what the outcome can be of the film that you make.
And clearly, Tessa, as you were not able to engage directly last year, destiny has actually made that this year you will do it all by yourself.
Oh goodness. I don't know. Well, I don't think I'm brave enough. I would love to, but
if you can handle if you can handle Bob Harris, whispering Bob Harris at BBC Radio 2,
look,
this is a piece of cake.
If I wasn't in my third year of journalism studies, I would actually, you know,
right.
Take up the challenge.
Tessa, I'll tell you, this is how you do it if you were doing it on your own, okay?
Okay.
So two clear ways of doing it. One is you animate it, if you're an animator, and we've had that happen in the past, and in fact, somebody won the challenge about 4 years ago who did exactly that, and it took him 36 hours to write and then animate a little short film, and he came first.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
It can be done.
Possible. And then the other thing is, again, depending on the scenario you get and the things that you get, think about if you were the only woman left alive in Lincoln or in the UK.
Could easily happen.
And you're a journalist, right? But everyone's disappeared, but the internet's still there, and you've got YouTube. So why don't you do just a thing to a reportage to camera saying, you know, where is everybody? You know, and you can tell a lovely little story in 5 minutes about how you miss your cat or whatever it is, you know, whatever. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You don't have to have, you know, 10 actors and write 50 lines of dialogue. You can do something very simple. And again, we've had this kind of stuff come through this is the 10th anniversary this year, and we've got about 1,400 films that have been made for the challenge. So,
that's,
you know,
fantastic.
we've seen a lot of different approaches and different takes to this. You know, again, from one person on their own to camera, through to, I think the biggest cast we ever had was 37. And it was shot at Richmond, a station in Richmond, and they'd pre-booked being able to go there on a Saturday and film on the station, and it was a terrible film, but but they had a blast because they did a kind of big zombie takeover at a train station. So
that sounds quite interesting, but I suppose less is more sometimes. So.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if there was the ability, you know, again, if you think of those scenarios, that's the great thing about science fiction and doing speculative, you know, fiction, is you can say, well, actually, if I was the last person and I'm a journalist, and what would I do? You know, what would I do? Well, I know what I'd do. I'd go hunting. First thing I'd do is I'd go and break into Alex's house and go and have a root around his knicker drawer.
Confession time
you
once again, exactly. And yes, I do
lock
wear
your
them,
drawers
okay?
in case you are
exactly.
the only person
who
there.
Sorry, Alex.
They're normally either black or boxer shorts. It has to be honest. You know, there we are, or white. I mean, you know, it's vanilla when it comes to the actual underwear department. Nothing too spectacular,
functional. We promise not to give you that as a prop.
No.
How do you come up with the props? How do you decide on what you're what you're going to put in the?
Well, there's probably six or eight on the team that help write the lines of dialogue and the titles. I mean, so I'm sure some of them are actual films, but we just sit there and as we're chatting, someone says, "Oh, that great 48 film title," and we just stick them all in a database. And then on the day, we have a computer program, and it just randomly allocates them to all the teams that register. And the same with the dialogue. So some people have ended up with some really good, you know, vague but useful things, like, I need to leave by 6:30, you know, so 10 o'clock's too late, or whatever, you know. So they could do that in a phone conversation, or in a pub, or on a trail, you know, you can deliver that anywhere and quite easily. Through to, things that are much more specific. And now, obviously, I can't think of a specific one, but we've had all sorts of stuff like that. And then things like the prop list, we try and think of things that are, we don't generate hundreds of unique ones, so we probably have 40 or 50 different things that we give people, or just the computer chooses from, and it just, you know, if there's 400 teams, it would do that 10 times, basically, to give each one a different one. And we try and think of things that, no matter where you are in the world, you should hopefully be able to get to a supermarket or some shop that's got batteries and a rucksack and, you know, someone with a passport, or two mobile phones or five watches or whatever it is. You know, those are the kind of things that we would do. So they're quite simple. And then the optional science stuff. I mean, we've worked with people like New Scientist in the past and got their readers to suggest some ideas, and we've had some great things from them. You know, things like nanotechnology is everywhere, and someone's just found a way to hack it. And you can get all sorts of stuff through that, and hopefully it will create a spark, you know.
Yeah, no, it's quite exciting as well, I suppose. And what's good about the challenge is it's really flexible, so teams can kind of do what they like with it as long as they follow, you know, the specs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And ultimately what we're looking for are good films. We're looking for people to create something entertaining, you know, whether that's dystopian or whether it's funny or whatever. You know, we've had a couple of films that have been quite amusing that have won, but they've also been really good science fiction and had really great production values. And we've had a couple of really dark dystopian kind of films. You know, it really is different every year. My biggest piece of advice normally to people is don't write a script, beforehand, because anyone who's made films before will realize, even if they just write five or six pages, and the general rule in film is 1 minute is one page of, you know, one page in a script is 1 minute. So a 90-minute film, 90 pages, yeah? So we just say don't write a script, because you don't have enough time to make that film in a weekend if you've kind of pre-thought everything out. Because there just isn't enough time. There's so much to do in a film production. And then everyone's ego gets involved, and it's not perfect, and you're not going to get this shot that you need and all that sort of stuff. The people who've mostly come in the top 10 each year have actually just turned up, you know, somewhere on the day, got their four things, and then had a writer with them. And then between them, they just all sit there and they spend a couple of hours brainstorming, you know, blue sky thinking, and just going, wow, blimey, you know, and trying to think of the simplest story they can think of, and then try and incorporate the things we give them, you know. And again, those can hopefully be a spark. You know, we've a lot of the winners have actually used all four things. So they've used the optional theme as well. So A, that we know it was definitely done that weekend. And it also their creative juices seem to spark much, much better doing it that way.
Perhaps it's because they are under pressure, you know, that maybe a lot of people do work well under pressure. They've got these 48 hours, they've just got to get on and do it.
I think, again, it's, you know, you don't have any time for any prima donnas. You know, there's no ego can come into this sort of stuff. You just have to say, right, I'll do this, I'll do that. You put a coffee on, you know, let's quickly go to there, let's run around the shop quickly and buy a rucksack. You know, it's all of that stuff. You know,
it's very similar to journalism, actually, when you're creating television and radio packages, and you're going out and, you know, interviewing and putting the script together, especially in television, because we work in pairs here in third year. Yep. So you've got to just get on and do it.
So you see, you saying that you know about doing it and how difficult it is.
If she's talked herself into it already.
Exactly. All you need is your partner, exactly. Right? For it working in pairs. And again, if the things you get given would fit, you know, a scenario that you as a journalist could jump on, and then you just treat it like a package. You know, you treat it like
a
news
Emily,
package.
You've got Hannah. Choose either.
Yeah. Tessa, we're giving you five minutes on air on Monday morning, right? Oh. And the incident happened on Saturday morning.
Okay.
You've got until Monday to deliver that five-minute package, and it's going out worldwide. I mean, that, you know,
you've
got that phone call from CNN, right? If you'd be able to do that, so you should you should be able to do the 48 hour.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean,
Louis,
yeah.
I was half expecting Phil Leonis to join us via Skype through the system, but I think for that level of motivation, is there any reason whatsoever not to do that, Tessa? Not to engage in that film challenge.
It's very interesting, and I think it's open to a lot of people. I guess it's not
but
film
Tessa,
or
yourself.
Yeah,
Hannah.
But we're making sure that you're going to do it.
I can tell.
Tessa version.
No pressure, but who knows?
I should just come and sit on the panel with you. I'd quite like to watch them and judge them.
Maybe next year. Let's make it first. Let's work on that basis. It's extraordinary.
Exactly. You make one, and then
I can sit on the team.
Remember?
Yeah, and actually, it's the toughest thing. There's one other piece of advice, actually. Anyone who's out there as well, anyone who's out there who's seriously thinking and taking part in this thing, just one other really funny piece of advice, I think, is that your friends aren't actors.
Yeah.
Unless they're actors, right?
Yeah.
Again, if you're going to try and put a little package together, if you know anyone who's an actor, try and get them for free that weekend if you can, if you're not doing it. Yeah. Now, given that you're getting experience in doing journalism, and certainly if you're going to be doing stuff to camera as a journalist, you've got to be 50% actor in that already, right? So, but if you think, keep that in mind.
Presentation.
It's
all presentation. It's all about the sale of it. And do I believe this person is in jeopardy, or this person is in love, or this person is the thief or the villain? And the better the actor, the much more believable it is. Even if the lines are rubbish, if it's cheesy dialogue, if it's delivered well, Benedict Cumberbatch has made a career from that, right? Martin Freeman, and on it goes. There's so many actors who are always themselves pretty much, but they just deliver it really well.
Yeah.
They just deliver the stuff really well, and you then believe the story. So,
have you ever taken part in an actual film challenge at all? Have you ever had the chance
Don't be silly.
Exactly.
you just put it together for the people to do.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Tessa, Louis, that has been probably the most inspirational phoner we've done since we started back in 2009.
Yeah.
It's 2008. It's just amazing.
You've created this wonderful thing.
I'm the motivational speaker at the event, so I'm not the one who's going to do it.
We haven't even a chance to actually, other than pointing people in the direction of scifilondon.com to find out details about the 10th annual 48-hour film challenge. We've got a whole stack of other items about the Sci-Fi London Film Festival itself between the 1st and the 7th of May. Would you like to ask those last two questions to Louis Savvy, please?
I would. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
It's been very good. Yeah,
oh, brilliant. And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
I certainly will. And if you want me back next week, I can give you our opening night film. We've got news on that.
Stunned deal, Louis. Stunned deal. Next week, you're back with us. Next
there
week,
you go,
same time,
done.
Midweek Drive. Louis Savvy will return. It's there. Guaranteed. Deal done.
Lovely. All right. Thanks, Tessa. It's all in its own. A boy and a girl who ought to know each other. But I feel you're looking at me, and in your eyes it's plain to see. One day soon we both could be much more than friends. But until then, it's a storybook love, and it's all, and it's all a fantasy world where we love one another. A storybook love, and it's all a boy and a girl who hardly know each other. But I already know now how much I'm gonna love you so. Feel it inside me, even though it hasn't happened yet. So all we get is a storybook love, and that's all, and that's all. A fantasy world where we love one another. Storybook love, and it's all a boy and a girl who hardly know each other. My imagination starts racing when I think of you. Well, it's a fairy tale right now, but you could make it all come true. It's a storybook love, and it's all, and it's all. Fantasy world where we love one another. Storybook love, and that's all, and that's all. A boy and a girl who hardly know each other. But I feel you're looking at me,
soon we both could be much more than friends. But until then, it's a storybook love, and that's all, and that's all. A fantasy world where we love one another. A storybook love, and that's all, and that's all. A boy and a girl who hardly know each other. A storybook love, and that's all, and that's all.
There are times in people's lives where sometimes they need to find some sort of emergency care and temporary accommodation for their best friends, be they canine, be they feline, whatever, etc. We're delighted now to welcome from the North East, in fact specifically from Redcar, the amazing Joy Kinglane. Joy, welcome, and let's talk a little bit more about what you actually do with respect to animal shelter in Redcar.
And thank you for inviting me to be on the radio. Thank you.
Genuine delight, Joy. So this particular sort of aspect, I mean, again, just talk us through the kind of things that you offer. And also, why did you come up with the idea of setting this animal sanctuary up in Redcar in the first place?
Right. The sanctuary's actually been started off in Saltburn 21 years ago when there was a need for homing and foster homes for stray animals. And 10 years ago, we bought a dilapidated farm at Redcar, Kirkleatham Farm off Kirkleatham, Foxrush Farm off Kirkleatham Lane in Redcar. And we've built it up and renovated it. And we're now able to house 16 dogs approximately and 16 cats. I've been a volunteer there for 4 years. And what we do is we take in and home stray, abandoned and wanted cats and dogs. And also, if people are unable to keep them any longer, we call them handovers, and people will hand over their pets, and we'll do our very best to find their forever homes. So we do have lots of... we have 4 permanent staff, and we have volunteers, though we always need lots more. And the animals are really well looked after. Lots of TLC, walked twice a day, fed, watered. It does cost £180,000 a year to keep the charity going, and £50,000 of vets' bills, because we're non-discriminatory against cost and we're non-discriminatory against breed. So we have lots of facilities, not just the fields and the woods where we walk the animals and the lovely cat sanctuary that we have, but we also have a joy lounge, which is a mock-up log cabin where there's furniture and rugs and the animals can feel a bit of luxury there. We have a wonderful sensory garden as well that we built last year, where the dogs and cats can be let free and they can roam among the herbs and the fountains and the water features that we've got. And we've also got a lovely enclosure where dogs can run off that pent-up energy that they have through being in the kennels for such a long time. So that's what we do. We do home checks for people who are interested, and we encourage people to come up and bond with our cats and dogs for as long as they want, take them out for walks, bring other pets that they might have, bring family members, and then we do a home check on all our animals, and then hopefully they go out on trial for up to a week, see how it gets on, and all being well, we have them adopted. And it's really nice because lots of people still bring their animals back to show us how well they're doing. It is £120 for dogs and £80 for cats, and this money goes towards, they are fully neutered, a clean bill of health from the vets, all their bloods are taken, injections, microchipped, fleed and wormed, so that goes towards the cost. So we have 4 permanent staff who dearly love all the animals, and it's like a big family, really. We do have lots of fundraising events. The next one is coming up at Saltburn Golf Club on Saturday, the 17th of March. Tickets available at the door, where we have live acts, guitars, groups, a ukulele band, the usual tombola and raffle. Then we have our Easter fair coming up at Mask Hall the end of the last day of March. And again, those funds will go towards feeding back and giving the animals the very best care that we can. But we always are in need of volunteers. So if anyone would like to get in touch with Sarah, Saving and Rehoming Animals at Foxrush Farm, Redcar, telephone number 01642 488108, or we are on Facebook, sarah.org.uk. So please, if you feel like being part of a happy family, helping and doing your best, lots of TLC for our animals, cat cuddlers, bunny strokers, dog walkers, lots of like gardening, to do cleaning, then please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
Joy, you've provided a very copious and very fulsome account of the whole system there. Interestingly, the next event, of course, taking place on St Patrick's Day, Saturday, 17th of March. We're speaking regularly to our American correspondent here based in Los Angeles, Phil Leonis. He was very keen on rescue cats. In fact, he's Fuzz Aldrin has been through a whole set of trials and tribulations and so on. In Britain, is this an evergreen problem as people actually either abandon their pets for all kinds of reasons, some obviously less clear than others, etc.? Do you notice that actually the need for sanctuaries like Zara kind of ever increasing?
Absolutely, because with high unemployment, landlords not wanting to have pets in their households, people develop allergies. We have an increasing number of people who are going into care homes or into hospitals.
Yes.
And so, you know, the reasons why people bring animals, sometimes babies come along, sometimes social services get in touch with us, they've maybe found abandoned animals where people have left their houses overnight. So we work closely with the RSPCA, with other charities. We work closely with social services and the police. So definitely cats and dogs, you know, there's an ever-increasing number of animals that do need our help out there through no fault of their own. And so if anyone, you know, does know of anybody who wants to rehome an animal, then please do get in touch with us. Yeah. But we do actually rehome animals from further afield as well, because there are pounds up and down the country where animals are, you know, on death row, as it were, and we actually have people who will get in touch with us, and if we have a place, we will take these animals on board. We do have a transportation system throughout, a network throughout the country, where we will actually ferry animals from further afield if we've got space in our own charity accommodation. Yeah. So it is definitely on the increase, yes, Alec.
Oh, yeah, okay. I mean, again, obviously we're based presently, I say, at Lincoln, and clearly from that sort of perspective, there's a whole range of elements that come through. Do you have a web address, Joy, that people, because you've given us our telephone contact numbers, telephone details, etc. Is there a website that people can go to as well?
We do. It's zara.org.uk.
Zara.org.uk. You can obviously play the podcast back again if you're listening via podcast. If not, certainly details can be forthcoming. Joy, it's been an absolute delight sharing some thoughts with you on the programme today. And we look forward to connecting with you again in the near future and hopefully having a little, maybe a location visit and actually do a piece with you outside Redco one day, if that's okay.
Look forward to that, absolutely, Alec. And thank you again for inviting me to speak.
And clearly when we start talking about cat cuddlers or bunny strokers, no, it's not illegal, we need to speak to our ace cat cuddler extraordinaire, the person who actually allowed the fantastic Fuzz Aldrin to actually share her particular life experience with him. Who could we be referring to, Tessa?
Oh, the wonderful Phil Leonis.
Oh, the wonderful Phil Leonis.
He is, though, isn't
well,
he?
Exactly. It's very true, exactly. It's Phil Leonis, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. We thought you might have joined us earlier. We thought you might have Skyped in and said, I'm here now, I can talk about all sorts of things. But in essence, you said no.
He's a busy man. He's got things
to do. Exactly.
Oh, I forgot about that. I forgot that you mentioned that in the email. But I've enjoyed listening to the piece about this center, obviously. In fact, I'm wondering, like, can I move there? That's where it sounds fantastic. And it's interesting how this seems to be coming up. Maybe it's because I'm aware of it more, but it really does seem to be an issue that is starting to get more of a spotlight put on it. Here in Los Angeles, at the end of April, there is a big fundraiser featuring, it's a comedy fundraiser on stage, featuring the likes of Lily Tomlin and Craig Ferguson. And the name of the fundraiser, which benefits Voices for the Animals, it's called Wait, Wait, Don't Kill Me. And it really is about trying to call attention to the fact that many animals that could survive, and Lily and I were facing this, aren't given the opportunity to because of financial considerations. And we've got to do better than that. A big step, obviously, in terms of what you were talking about during your interview, Alex, is, again, the importance of spaying and neutering. We could eliminate a lot of the problem if cats were spayed and neutered. But you know, it is a big issue, and one of the things that people even face is when they have children, and suddenly the child has an allergy, and a beloved pet can no longer be a part of the household. Of course, I think people are approaching that wrong, because I think it's very easy to get a baby adopted out. Anyway.
Interesting connection.
It is, isn't it?
Go down that line, really. It could be eugenics. I still think, as I mentioned earlier in the show, why doesn't Donald Trump just take a leaf out of a Chinese president book and actually turn around and say, look, forget the elections, let me stay in for life?
You know?
I mean, a Trump is for life, surely, not just for two terms of office. Sorry,
Phil.
He said that. He complimented that very thing recently in a speech. He said, we may go that way. Yeah.
And the cheers throughout the land were just like, yay. It is the Ferengi law of acquisition. Every so often declare peace, it confuses the heck out of your enemies.
Well, this conversation escalated quickly. Mm-hmm. I leave the room for 2 minutes.
It's what happens. It's what happens when you try to actually eliminate the entire citizenship of Salisbury. It's like a James Bond movie. Never mind. Anyway, you'll be pleased to know, Phil, that the Stone Tapes team have assembled they're currently doing their warm-up exercises. Sam Stone is doing her breathing exercises, and David J. Howe is actually doing his usual 34 press-ups, which he likes to do before every
press. Gosh, that's a lot of
press. I almost wrote David last night, and I hoped that I would actually get a chance to speak to him today. Did our meeting in February happen and I just was so drunk I don't remember, or did plans change?
I think plans changed, obviously. Yeah. You know, what can we say? They were over in the States doing their own thing, as they're wont to do every so often.
That.
Exactly.
Yes.
And clearly they didn't think of that. Which is why, Phil, you may appreciate that I've actually done an e-introduction, as I like to refer to the new technological media that we use in terms of electronic mail, an e-introduction between yourself and Darren Scales. Because Darren, not only will he be on the show in 2 weeks' time, but also the director of The Expanse and that whole awesome series is coming to Los Angeles. And I said, well, clearly, because Darren, when he came by this afternoon to say that Kasia Nicklin is lost in Peterborough and unlikely to return for at least a fortnight, he said these
lost
words.
In
he said,
lost?
Yeah.
It's not that big.
Oh, Tessa, you speak as a native.
But,
you speak
that is
as
true.
A native. You
know, yeah, I do.
Yeah, you know, somebody just outside Lincoln, outside Peterborough in Glinton. It's a different line. But anyway, Darren said, and I'm trying to quote with the suitable pathos here.
Okay.
Do you think it might be possible to meet up with Phil Dearness when I'm over in Los Angeles? So I said, Darren, I'll do an e-introduction
there
thing right away and schedule that so that, you know, we can connect. Sorry, Phil, hopefully you've received that email and it hasn't been filed along with the do you want to contribute via Skype earlier in the show sort of slot.
Well, I might have received it, receiving it and reading it, reading it and comprehending it altogether. Look, it takes more than one person to be Phil Lernis. I mean, that in answer to Darren's question, meet up with Phil Lernis. Is there a Phil Lernis, and who can answer it off the top of his head? But we'll put the team to work on it, and we'll try to suss something out.
There we go.
And is it true you're still looking to come over here sometime this year, Phil? I mean, Louis Savvy would be keen to find that out, really. I mean, I was tempted to actually say, do you think we could get Phil Learness today to take part in the 48-hour film challenge? Or would that be seen as entering a ringer, so to speak? Would that be a case of... Anyway.
I think any 48-hour period is a challenge enough for me. We definitely, Dean and I have been talking about this. It makes a lot of sense for us to do a barnstorming tour of the UK. We have to coordinate this with his now official announcement that he is moving back to North America. A little bit later than we anticipated, not July. He's moving back, I think, in September, and not to Los Angeles, as it turns out.
He will be
moving to Motor City, Motown, Detroit, Detroit, as I like to call it, in September. So we will be setting up a barnstorming tour of the Lady Killers for Midwestern cities in fall, and we'll see how we can coordinate that with a UK trip.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'd like to meet you, Phil. I haven't yet.
Yeah, well, it's been exactly. I mean, as I said, I mentioned clearly Emma Tenson, and she's sort of out there in the big wide world now. I mean, I wonder if Phil Leonis Will and Chilpak Hollywood Hour actually have anything to say about the fact that over the last 72 hours in Britain, we've lost Ken Dodd.
Oh, I know.
And we've lost Jim Bowen, Bullseye, and Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, three, a triple whammy there.
Yeah, you got Doctor Who, you got Star Trek: The Next Generation, and you got Bullseye. You know, weather.
Three greats have left us.
I don't know how we get around talking about Stephen Hawking. I mean, but we are, as you know, we're months behind, literally months behind in our celebrity death section.
Yes, exactly. And you need a black hole to actually, you need to go through that black hole to sort that thing through, to go through the Einstein-Rosen bridge, to find out Hawking's views on space-time continua, and then it'll all be sorted.
That's right, and I do like that we're a little bit behind, because I feel like there's so much pressure in all our lives to stay up to the minute and to stay au courant. And we then quickly forget. Mm-hmm. Like at the end of the year, we go, wait a minute, so-and-so died? I don't even remember that. So I kind of like that we wait a couple months, and then we have a more thoughtful celebration of the people. So we'll get around to that, eventually.
Spoken as a true superhero who has the power of actually smelling color through through his knee. Which is astounding.
Okay, that's a new one.
It's one for Stan Lee to open on with "Oh Lucky Man." You know, clearly, I'm going to suggest that to the Lee Meister, that clearly that could be his next sort of line from that. It's a great superheroic power, which is great. Ability to see.
It's different.
We started broaching the topic of maybe someday doing a show of our top 10 superpowers that would all be utterly useless. But what would be our top 10 least useful superhero powers? And Dean's was being able to, what is it, see colors through his knee or sense colors through his knee.
Oh,
and,
I see.
And mine was the ability to smell 3 seconds into the future.
You see, back in the day, Tessa, before you actually emerged in this planet in your current incarnation, back in the day of Timothy Leary, back in the Origins of Modern Britain day, where Tune In, Turn On, Drop Out, I would have said either Phil or Dean or both had possibly been inhaling some odd substances, you know, to come up with those kind of ideas.
Perhaps.
It's probably watching 2001 A Space Odyssey at the same time.
Well, it's very creative, I'll give you that.
Just dropped in to just when I thought it's going to be Phil doing a kind of Marcus Welby MD, but from a veterinary perspective on Fuzz Aldrin, suddenly they start talking about all manner of strange, bizarre things. I tell you, it put me into a whole new world this afternoon.
I bet it did. Oh. I can imagine.
So, was there anything else on the programme that you'd like to comment on, Phil, given that for 2 weeks of the week of the year only, you can actually listen to the whole midweek drive, because obviously now in Los Angeles it's just approaching midday, whereas usually once we spring forward in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be back to just having an hour's difference, etc. I mean, anything from Stephanie Romyshevsky's sleep physiology, views from Andy Kerr in Belfast, from Afnan Prince, or indeed William Coles's Pilgrimage that particularly appealed.
I want to talk about the sleep issue, but I want to actually address your question now is what I want to talk about, because it doesn't make it more likely that I can listen to all of the show just because the time is different.
So anything else to do in Los Angeles on a Wednesday morning?
It used to be for me 9 to 11. Now it's 10 to noon.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you. I know it seems like my life is really, really glamorous, but I always have things to be doing.
Good heavens.
Thank goodness it's not 9 to 11. 10 to 12 makes all the difference in the world. No, not really. But we did change clocks this week here in the States. Which is only appropriate that we do it before everyone else, since we certainly set the clocks back many decades with our last presidential election. But the issue of time and this losing an hour of sleep has been fascinating and covered in ways that I've never seen before. It turns out that it's incredibly unhealthy. As a matter of fact, there are more heart attacks the day following the time change of losing an hour than on any other day of the year. It really messes with people's health and their rhythms. And it makes you wonder, why do we even do it anymore?
Because we need folk to actually work in the munitions factories and to actually make weapons, so we can actually have weapons of mass destruction.
Oh.
Or maybe we stopped that after the Second World War. It's very confusing. It's fashion, I suppose.
I never thought it had to do with the agriculture industry. Was that not true?
Both, but mostly it was to do with weapons. You couldn't have people actually going through the process. Certainly not in Britain, anyway. I don't know what you were doing in the States. Probably doing something completely different. Anyway, so it goes as we revision history just in our own sort of lifespan.
We need to ask Phil what makes him smile. Remember?
Do you know, you're quite right, exactly. What makes Phil Leonis smile? The ultimate straight man in so many ways, the ultimate deliverer of
me,
the
so.
Somber yeah. scenario. What makes Phil Leonis smile? Is it people saying, I love you? What makes you smile, Phil?
No, that does not make me
nice,
smile.
Nice, you
that,
see, exactly.
We should explain why we're asking him this.
Yeah, quick, because...
That's the weight of responsibility on my shoulders. You know, Franz Aldrin makes me smile.
There you go. That's what we were looking for.
Yesterday, Fuzz was up on my shoulder. Fuzz was meeting some people. Fuzz was up on my shoulder, and Lily suddenly got a horrified look on her face. And I thought, oh no, what's happening? Does Fuzz not look well? Is Fuzz getting sick again up on my shoulder? And what she was reacting to was the fact that Fuzz immediately leapt off my shoulder and up onto the top of a door. And this is a maneuver that she had not done in quite some time, obviously, since before she was sick. So she was leaping up atop a 7.5-foot door. And that made me smile.
Okay.
Being able to see that she has come that far back from being a cat 2 months ago, we were told was not going to live.
Oh. Well,
you say miracles can happen, even if, to quote Phil Leonis of the latest edition of Chilpack Hollywood, they sometimes can be a bit expensive. Don't think about the cash, for goodness sakes! It's the power of love, as Huey
yes.
Lewis in the News once said.
Okay.
And indeed Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and Jennifer Rush.
Right. Well,
yes. Tomorrow morning, Edith Bowman, broadcaster extraordinaire, will be sharing with us what makes her smile, as far as this National Smile Day is concerned.
Yes.
All due to the fact that Amazon, fantastic company, although other online distributors and warehouses are available, not set up by Jeff Bezos, have actually set up this system whereby you can actually use Amazon Smile to make other people smile in terms of charities and various other welfare things as well. So they came out with this research in terms of what makes British people, traditionally known for reserve, what makes us smile?
Well, according to this research, and apparently the average Brit smiles 6,205 times a year.
6,250 smiles per year, Phil.
I know, that's quite a lot of smiles. Sunny days, saying I love you, and random acts of kindness were the top three things that make people smile. And I think you mentioned earlier, wasn't it, elderly people
holding hands, although I tend to say just get a room. That's my particular line, really.
Do you know what, though? I think that would triple. If we had more sunny days, I think the smiles would triple.
Great. So,
because we are not, we're kind of known as, I don't know, are we known as a bit of a moody nation?
I don't know. Let's ask Phil. He's a foreigner. He's from Norway originally.
He's where the sun shines.
Exactly. Yeah, California people. Yeah. Do you regard us Brits as being
a bit
of a moody nation?
I will say this about the sunshine issue. Think about all the westerns you've ever seen, which are all have a lot of sunshine. Everybody squints. Nobody smiles. You can't smile when you're squinting. So you don't want it too bright. Don't want it too bright. In fact, I feel that darker makes me smile more because it also the darker light makes me look younger.
I never thought about that side of things, really.
And the classic remake, which we will incorporate into the Midweek Drama musical, Can't Squint Without You. Can't Squint Without You. So,
okay.
Anyway.
that did not make me smile.
No, I didn't think it would. Every so often you have to roll out a system and say that we have reached the end of the Midweek Drive for another edition, the March the 14th, 2018 edition. The Midweek Drive morning edition will be back tomorrow, needless to say, with the Education Officer for the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Rosie Crust, talking about countryside links. Chris Dowes will be talking about his recent articles for Star Trek magazine, in which he talks about cloaking devices for the Klingons, and the Horta from the Devil in the Dark episode of Star Trek the original series. So more from Chris Dowes then. Gabriella Peralta will be linking up with us from Gibraltar. Richard Fitzwilliams will be talking about a couple of interesting movies, as ever. Ian Lennox will be reflecting with yourself, Tessa, on how that Tyneside trip was. and yes. why they let you go. And we've got Poland's answer to Ed Sheeran's Zekrajewski, the aforementioned Edith Bowman, and Alan Stevens, who will be back with us on the production. In case you're saying, but what about Phil Leonis's transatlantic Skype link, etc.? It'll be 1 a.m. in Los Angeles time. So he doesn't do that sort of time.
I suppose I don't blame him, really.
He'd be balancing the spoon. He'd be balancing the spoon to wake him up to give him creativity.
Yes.
As indeed outlined by Afnan Prince and Stephanie Romaszewski, who one of these days actually will probably be on the same show at the same time as Phil Leonis, and they can interact in a wondrous way about there sleep, the importance of it and otherwise. So, Tessa, would you like to put those last two questions to the Leonismeister, the keeper of the Fuzz Aldrin spirit, and indeed the partner of Lily Holloman?
Yes, of course. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the show
He's
today?
Been grinning for every second.
Of course I've enjoyed it, although Alex did leave out in his description of me just now, future tour guide for Darren Scales.
Nice. Please continue. Nice, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and on that note, will you be joining us again soon?
I have nowhere else to go.
Oh, please. It's not as though we're doing the scene from Officer and a Gentleman where I have to pick Tessa up at the end of the day and carry her out of the actual studio. And, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, sorry, it's a health and safety issue. Say, I got nowhere else to go. It's not going to happen, even if you have got Louis Gossett Jr. lined up. Is it Gossett or Gossett? I've all been confused. Phil Leonis will return. Officer and a Gentleman, have you ever seen the movie?
I don't know.
Richard Gere. And,
see, if I asked my mum, I don't know, but from the top of my head, I don't think
right.
I have.
Okay. Tessa, have you enjoyed your hour?
I have. I really have. It's been eventful.
Back again tomorrow morning?
Yes, I am. Bright
Excellent.
And early.
What should we say to you liked hailing frequencies closed, I believe. Or should we just say keep smiling?
Oh,
yes,
nice.
Yes, I like that.
What do you do? Keep smiling or hailing frequencies closed?
I like keep smiling.
Okay, let's smile and keep smiling. After three. One, two, three.
Keep smiling. Well, that didn't work, did it?
Well, we didn't get Phil saying anything, actually.
Maybe he didn't want to say
it. No, you will never hear me say keep smiling to anyone.
Really?
Oh, okay, we won't say that. What should we say?
We'll go hailing frequencies closed. That's what he wanted to say.
How am I saying that?
Hailing frequencies closed.
Oh, hailing. There we go.
Hailing.
That's why I didn't want to say it, because I didn't quite catch it.
I can go into all sorts of non-politically correct humour about Asian actors, but I'm not going to go in anyway. No, let's go.
Okay.
So, a one, two, three.
Hailing
frequencies closed.
Oh, God.
All right, we need a rehearsal.
Yes.
Let's rehearse.
We tried.
On Skype, and we'll get it next week.
We will.
On days like this, oh, tell me you love me.